Laleith Taylor from Taylor Nutrition. Now, is this a proper term, like registered dietitian? Is that the proper term I'm supposed to use?
Yeah, that would be the proper term.
Okay.
That would be the regulated term.
The regulated. Is there other terms?
There are. Registered nutritionist would be another one.
Okay.
We don't necessarily go by nutritionist because anybody can call themselves a nutritionist by taking a weekend course. So we usually like the title registered.
Registered. Mm-hmm. Okay. The RD.
The RD. Dietitian works too.
Nice. Okay. I talked about coffee. Now I don't drink it.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's a lot of people that, you know, they feel they need it just for their everyday life. What about from sports performance? How does caffeine work in our body?
So caffeine, it is a natural ingredient. We find it in a lot of food sources. So coffee for sure being one of them, from the coffee beans, cocoa nuts, tea leaves also have caffeine, and guarana. Now, caffeine stimulates our central nervous system, and it causes a series of events to take place. So our pupils will dilate, our muscles tighten, it increases our heart rate, and it can actually help to release glucose or sugar into our bloodstream for energy. And for some people, including myself, it can also help increase alertness and concentration, and it can even help aid in sport performance.
How so?
So when we're thinking about sport performance, it can help increase a heightened sense of awareness, and it can also decrease your perception of effort. And this is huge. That's probably one of the biggest advantages. So for individuals who are participating in endurance activities such as running, biking, and even cross-country skiing, if they get some caffeine on board, it's a bit easier for them to carry through with that activity.
Hmm.
And also for short burst intense activities, it's often thought as one of the first step enhancers. So we're talking about activities such as football and even sprinting.
Now, can you have too much?
Absolutely. So the most amount of research indicates that about 2 to 3 milligrams of caffeine per kilogram of body weight is shown to be the most efficacious. Now, I'm throwing around a lot of numbers, and people are like, well, what does that mean? So to put that into perspective, so if I had a 175-pound male, that would mean he would take in around 160 to 240 milligrams of caffeine. So that's about 1.5 to 2 cups of coffee prior to some type of sporting event.
And how much prior? Is it you crush it right before you start?
And the timing and the dosing is going to be very dependent on each individual. So I know for most individuals, it's about a half an hour to an hour prior to that event.
Okay.
But back to your first question about, is there too much? Absolutely. So Health Canada came up with the stipulation of having no more than about 400 milligrams of caffeine per day. And one of the reasons why is, and I know, Jason, you mentioned you hate coffee, but a lot of people, not just a dislike towards coffee, but a very sensitive ability towards caffeine in general. So some individuals, they get jittery, they get anxious, irritable. It can cause them to be super hyper. And so it could actually hurt their sport performance by having caffeine on board. Not only that, too much caffeine can excrete more calcium and put you at further risk for decreasing your overall bone density. So it's definitely finding that line of balance between, is it helpful for my performance? And if so, how much do I need? Or is it going to be of detriment to my overall athletic performance?
We had so much feedback the first time we had Laleith on. A lot of people with questions. They enjoyed the insight on it, so I'll have her in likely once every month or every 2 months, time permitting for you. Now they got your own company. It's it's rather busy. So, you know, sports performance, there's one. We are going to get into like the natural juicing, I guess it's called, from fruits and everything like that, but not juicing with steroids. But we've had a lot of questions over time about creatine. So First of all, what is it?
Yeah, so creatine, it is an essential amino acid, and our body does create about half of the creatine in our body. So our liver will help create part of it. And then the rest of it, we actually get from our diet. So the best sources of creatine in our diet are going to be wild game, fish, and meat. And so one of the reasons why creatine is important and why I wanted to talk about it is because it's probably one of the most widely used ergogenic aids in the sport industry. So I thought for sure we needed to talk about it today. And one of the reasons why it's the most widely used is because it is helpful, as some people believe, to increase high-intensity exercise capacity and muscle mass during training.
So now when you say high-intensity, so if you take creatine, you'll have better endurance?
So, for example, if you're weightlifting and you're just spent and you have utilized all of that ATP in your muscles, that creatine is just going to push you to the next level and help you get through that rep or that set. And so that's very advantageous for people who are wanting to build muscle mass and who are doing these high intensity exercises.
Now, creatine, you know, Mark McGuire would be the big one. There was a lot of people that felt like if you're taking creatine, you're cheating, right? In the sports community.
I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. Even individuals within the IOC, and that's the International Olympic Committee, allow creatine to be used amongst athletes.
It's just a certain dosage, right?
And that's where you really need to work closely with a professional to talk about dosing guidelines and also to figure out whether or not creatine is going to be the best fit for you. Now, there's definitely a large body of evidence saying that creatine has not been effective for individuals who are doing endurance and aerobic performance. And that makes sense because when you're taking creatine and you're building that muscle mass, you're going to become heavier. And so for people who are running or biking, that's not advantageous to have a lot of weight on them, whether it be, and I mean, we want muscle mass for sure, but we don't want to have a lot of bulky muscle mass. Now, also, there could be some very dangerous and possibly harmful effects of taking creatine when it comes to your kidney, your liver, and your heart function. So anybody thinking about getting started on a creatine supplement needs to make sure that they don't have any pre-existing kidney or liver problems. And some of the side effects with creatine include cramping, dehydration, nausea, and diarrhea. So it may not be the best supplement for you. Now, for individuals who are, though, playing or participating in activities, rather, that require quick and powerful movements, such as sprinting, football, and even weightlifting, this might be a supplement that could put you to the next level or enhance your athletic performance.
How will someone know if a supplement's, like, how long do you have to take it before you know if it's working for you or working against you?
Well, with creatine, again, there are specific dosing guidelines. So some of the suggested dosing guidelines are to start with a larger dose for about 5 to 7 days, and then you taper that dose of creatine significantly. And for some individuals, they may not even need to take that creatine supplement if their diet is quite high in meat or fish, because your muscle cells are going to get to a certain saturation point where they don't need any more. So to continue on with the creatine supplement is not going to do anything.
Does age become an issue? Like I know most kids should, we've had a lot of trainers on when they talk about physical stuff. You shouldn't have 10-year-old kids lifting heavy weights for the most part. So what about creatine? Is it dangerous at a younger age?
I wouldn't advise youth under the age of 18 to get on a creatine supplement.
Okay.
With that being said, I remember being in high school and all the guys in my class were pushing supplements like you wouldn't believe. But we don't necessarily know the long-term effects. That hasn't been researched thoroughly.
Okay.
So starting out on a creatine supplement at a young age, I would be concerned about kidney problems down the road. And again, you don't want to be too much of a good thing is a bad thing. So again, going back to those dosing guidelines, you really want to make sure that you're working with an expert to figure out what you're doing is appropriate and how much of what you're doing is appropriate.
Registered dietitian Lalitha Taylor joins me. So what's the drop? Well, we talked about the health risks of creatine. Is there by taking too much, let's say, what would be the big drawback of that?
By taking too much of any type of high protein type of supplement, you could really damage your kidney.
Okay.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that with our next supplement, which is going to be whey.
Yeah. Now I want to talk about the protein and the whey supplements. So, when this is a key one, I think, because a lot of people out there are like, hey, you know what? My kids are working out lots and whey powder, or I'm training now and whatever they're doing for running. And if you're not taking the nutrition at the right time, you might think you're doing it all right, but you're really not getting the maximal benefits you can. So when should people use them and why?
So again, it's really going to depend on that activity. So we're talking about, I would say, more of the athletes who are working out about 60 minutes plus a day. Now, if you're just going on the elliptical and lollygagging for about 20 minutes, chances are you don't need a pre-workout snack or a post-workout snack.
Okay.
So this talk, I think, today is really geared towards individuals who are striving to increase their athletic performance, gain muscle mass, etc. So when we're thinking about the timing of that nutrition, and really with the whey protein, and that's what we're going to get into now, that's mainly for post-workout.
Yes.
Okay. And we talk about this window of opportunity amongst dietitians. And the window is really about 30 minutes. Within 30 minutes post-workout, you really want to get in a good source of carbohydrate and protein. And one of the reasons why we turn to that whey protein is because it has all of your essential amino acids. It has your branched chain amino acids. It has an antioxidant known as glutathione. And so that's going to play a role in immunity, and it's going to help your muscles recover and repair immediately. And that's what we want, because when we think about strength training, weightlifting, we're essentially tearing those microfibers, right, in those muscles. So we want to be able to replenish them, recover them quickly.
What are the best types in your mind and why?
Of protein powders?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so again, when we're thinking about the protein powders, and there's just so many out on the market. And again, the one that I turn to post-workout, especially if you're doing something like strength training, is going to be the whey protein. Just because, like I said before, it does have such a variety of all of those essential amino acids. It has antioxidants. It has the branched chain amino acids. It's more superior than soy and also your casein when it comes to that muscle repair and recovery. And it's also been shown to have greater increases in lean mass and better improvements in strength in comparison to other protein powders.
Now, how much, though, should you be? Now, I'm assuming it's based on your own size and weight?
Yeah. And again, post-workout, we're not really wanting anything more than about 20 to 30 grams of protein.
Which is what's that equivalent to?
So that would be equivalent to about a chicken breast, half a chicken breast, okay. So 3 ounces.
So one of those scoops normally, is one scoop considered?
And it depends on the supplement.
Sure.
And again, you know, I'm not here, and I hope people recognize this, I'm not here trying to push supplements by any means. I'm just trying to provide the education towards it. If you can get your protein and your nutritional needs, Whole foods, wow, that's going to be so much more efficacious than taking a protein powder. But I mean, I've worked with athletes, and it's just not feasible sometimes to be carrying around meat or eggs in their backpack all day and then thinking that's going to be food safe for them to consume, right? So sometimes whey protein or protein powder can be really convenient and a safe way for them to meet their nutritional requirements post-workout.
I know some people talk, you know, their hectic schedule now. They're busy. They don't work out. They're like, but I'm having a protein shake for lunch.
Yeah. No. And the thing is, you want to be careful with that because, and I'm going to talk about intakes and what not to exceed. So I'm going to pull out some numbers now. Really, you should not be exceeding 2.5 grams per kilogram of that whey protein powder per day. And so if I had a 185-pound male, that would look like 210 grams of that protein powder. Okay. So for some people, that sounds like a lot, but if you're chugging that protein powder for lunch, post-workout, for breakfast, it can all add up. So if you're taking in large amounts of protein powder, it can put you at risk of dehydration, low carb intake, because you're taking in all this protein powder. And you can also take in extra energy because of the protein powder too. And another thing too, it can increase your urinary calcium excretion. So it can actually leach calcium from your bones, which is going to predispose you to a lower bone density, which is something you don't want to get into. So again, it's about finding that fine balance, right? And not overdoing it on any one thing, keeping it in moderation.
We talked, and you mentioned how a lot of the protein stuff, this should be post-workout stuff. What are some foods, natural foods, that you would recommend pre-workout?
So pre-workout, and again, depending on the type of activity that you're doing. So I know for a lot of individuals, it tends to be a combination of cardio and strength training. I really like to get some carbohydrate on board. And the reason being is your body requires fuel in the form of glucose to fuel your muscles. And so without that, you're not going to be burning energy as efficaciously during your workout. And so I know a lot of people think that, oh, working out on an empty stomach, that's going to be more beneficial. I'm going to burn more fat, or just working out just with protein is going to help. But I've seen people bonk on the treadmill. They hit a wall just because they don't have enough glucose in their blood. So I know for me, and again, it's going to be very individual. And a lot of this is going to be figuring this out for yourself through trial and error. But I know for me, sometimes a banana and a tablespoon of peanut butter is what works for me. And I can work out for an hour and then I have my post-workout snack. If I'm doing a heavier cardio workout that day, I'm going to get more carbohydrate on board. So it's really going to depend on the activity. You're going to taper your intake to what your activity is going to be.
Is there anything for kids, obviously not pumping coffee or creatine or anything like that, mm-hmm. that you would, you know, maybe if your child, if they didn't have as much food as they would like, is there any thing for kids that you recommend that parents can get to them before a sporting activity?
Yeah. And so when we're thinking about kids, absolutely, we don't want to be dabbling into the ergogenic aids, the supplements at that point, but really being on point with their hydration and also their carbohydrate intake. And the two of those together are going to ensure that your child is going to perform at their peak during that sporting activity. So at this point, again, I'm not encouraging supplements under the age of 18, really, unless we have some really competitive athletes who are, you know, playing soccer, then yeah, you know, after 60 minutes, they can get a sports drink on board. That's something that I wouldn't hesitate to recommend to help replace electrolytes and rehydrate them. But prior, you know, just the hydration and the carbohydrates, really.
And when you get one of those sports energy drinks, would you dilute it with water a little bit?
It depends on the individual. I know if I take in a sports drink myself, if I'm playing hockey, I find that it's not too bad. It's not too sweet for me. They're quite diluted as it is. But if you're finding that it's still a little bit too thick, you can absolutely dilute it with water. The point of those sports drinks, again, are to help replace electrolyte losses, mainly sodium and potassium, allow you to get a little bit of carbohydrate on board too. The content of them, it's been devised for that purpose. So, because, I mean, man alive, if you had juice and you're playing an activity like hockey, it's just like, it's thick. It's like honey when you're drinking that, right? So, I mean, the sports drinks are fairly diluted, but again, somebody could dilute it further if they can't tolerate it.
The supplement industry is notorious for poor oversight. How do you know you are getting a good quality creatine? Rob asks that one.
I love that question. Thank you, Rob. Now, you're absolutely right. The supplement industry, it is a billion-dollar industry, and everybody and their dog has something out there. And so you really want to make sure that the supplement that you're purchasing is regulated. And one way that you can do that is to check to see if it has a natural health product number. And it will literally say NPN, and it will have a number beside
that. Where would that be on?
It will be on the container somewhere. So an NPN is very similar to a drug identification number, which you find on your over-the-counter medications or your prescription medications. And so that NPN ensures a level of standardization and regulation so that what you're purchasing isn't just a bottle of flour, it's actual whey protein, right? So that's a great question. Also, other things, I mean, we get a lot of products from the States too. You can also go on www.fda.gov, so www.fda.gov, rather, to check to see if there's anything that's been recalled. You can do searches on supplements to see if there's information on supplements out there. So do your due diligence when purchasing supplements and see if there's any evidence-based material out there to back up those purchases.
Bob wants to know, he hears that whey powder is not regulated. A, is that true? B, what are good ones?
Yeah. Again, you want to check for that NPN number, and you want to go to perhaps a dietitian like myself who can recommend some good quality protein powders. But check to see if there is some regulated products out there when you go into your health food store or your GNC.
What about the energy? We got a lot of runners texting in. It's running season now. The energy gels. Are there natural alternatives that are just as effective?
Yeah. And again, going to those energy gels, and most of them, I think, have around 25 milligrams of caffeine in them per pop. And, you know, personally, I've used them when I've done half marathons. And this is really going to be through trial and error to figure out whether or not it works for you. I know one of my friends who's a runner as well, she'll take one of those sports gels with caffeine. And that's another thing we didn't mention. Caffeine can prompt sudden and urgent bowel movements.
What?
So that's not something that you want when you're running a half marathon.
So you're telling me that picture online of the guy soiling his pants when he's running, that's probably because he crushed a little too much protein?
Or caffeine, maybe.
Yeah, caffeine? Yeah. Really?
Well, and not
Note
only
to
that.
Self.
I mean, you can get a lot of gastrointestinal cramping when you're running as it is. So to add caffeine to that can be really detrimental to a runner. So it's something that you want to trial. I mean, if you find that the caffeine is further upsetting, then avoid it and just opt for a gel that doesn't contain any caffeine or a shot block that doesn't have any caffeine. You got to figure it out through trial and error.
A lot of people are allergic to whey and soy. So is there a vegetarian option? Are there other options?
Yeah. So you can actually get hemp protein powder. There's even rice protein powder on the market too. So definitely search around, because there's vegetarian sources of protein powder for sure. They may not be as efficacious as the whey. So I'm going to put that out there, but they're good choices. And if you're not vegetarian, but you're still allergic to whey, if you're able to pack, you know, half a chicken breast or even some eggs, awesome. Because that's an even better source of that protein.
Okay. A few other ones. A lot of people text, and we have a lot of marathon runners or long cyclists and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Would water, like you talked about this earlier, you're still a proponent of just the natural stuff first, like water and fruit. Is that better, such as Accelerate or Endurox?
Now, are we talking kids or are we talking adults?
Adults.
And is this pre-running or?
During a long run / ride.
Yeah. And again, this is going to be really individual. I remember I've done really long bike trips, like 150K in one day. And I got the sports drink on board. I had sports bars on board that were high in carbohydrate. But it's a matter of figuring out what's going to work best for you and ensuring that you're getting a regular amount of fluid and carbohydrate on board almost every half hour to 45 minutes for sure when it comes to the carbohydrate if you're doing long distances, because you do not want to be on your bike, especially if you're doing 90 or 150K and bonk. That is the worst feeling in the world.
We talked a lot about the supplements, and proper hydration is likely one of the big concerns for a lot of people. Like, you know, what about just having, you know, a glass of water before a workout?
Absolutely.
Like, let's say you've had a big breakfast, but does having more water, does that benefit you?
Yes. And, you know, water in general, it's huge, especially for individuals who are listening right now and are thinking even weight management, right? By having more water on board, it can actually make you feel a little bit fuller so that you're not taking in as many calories throughout the day. We actually get signals from our bodies saying that, hey, you might be hungry, but it's actually a signal indicating that you're thirsty. We get the two signals mixed up. So always grabbing and gravitating towards the water first is always a great idea. And anytime you're being active, it's so crucial that you're not just getting one cup of water on board, but you're getting maybe two or three cups even, depending on the activity.
Lalitha Taylor, a registered dietitian, joins us. We've talked a lot about individuals, and because for everybody it's going to be different, whether you're 190 pounds, maybe you're 175 pounds. Some people's body actually function better with more protein compared to more carbohydrates. How can we find out which foods work better for our body? Is it just trial and error? Is there a fast way to do it? How can we find out?
I wish there was a fast way to do it. Unfortunately, we all have different chemical makeups and we all have different genetic predispositions as well. And we were just talking about this earlier, how some people are naturally more skinnier than others, the ectomorphs, and some are more stockier, the endomorphs. And so we're going to have to work with that genetic makeup and your overall chemistry to figure out what kind of nutrients are going to work best for you. But really, in the big scheme of things, from what I've seen with clients working with them over the past 10 years, is it's a balance of nutrients. It's not overdoing it on one particular nutrient. It's getting a balance of everything.
Now, I will say that one of the big perks of having you come is you always bring us a different dessert. And Majo was, all he heard was, oh, I brought you something. And I've never seen him spin that fast in his life. What? Free food? The bachelor. Now, you brought, this is fudge?
It is fudge.
But can you explain what's in it?
So I made Jason and Majo try this first, and then I made them guess to see what was in it. So there's actually lentils and pumpkin seeds, and that's the main part. That's the meat of the fudge, essentially. And then,
because it's definitely not as heavy as a normal fudge.
Right. And then there's coconut oil, and there's honey and cocoa powder. So there's actually no chocolate really in there other than the chocolatey taste coming from the cocoa powder.
So would this be considered like a healthy sweet alternative?
Yeah, so that's going to be a healthier alternative because we got some good fat on board. We got pumpkin seeds that are rich in iron. We have lentils, which are, and also pumpkin seeds have protein too. We have lentils that are going to be high in fiber, high in protein, high in iron as well. So we got some really good nutrients in there.
I might get you to tweet me that recipe because I know the last one when you came in a month ago, we tweeted, which had the peanut butter and the bananas and the pumpkin seeds, and people were tweeting back saying they loved it.
Yes.
So it's a healthy snack.
Yep.
And parents are always looking for, because every kid loves sweets. I don't know many kids who don't. And so if you can, hey, look at this. It looks like it's sweet. It tastes like it's sweet. So the kids will think it's good.
Right. Well, it looks like fudge and it tastes like fudge. Yeah. It's fudge.
It is fudge. So it's good for you. We actually, today we're going to have fun. We're going to auction off an individual consultation. So that includes a 1-hour assessment, a food journal analysis, meal plan, and follow-ups from you. So if anybody out there, whether you're wanting to get training, maybe you just want to lose some weight. Maybe you're like, hey, you know what? I'm done. I'm sick of carrying the extra 20 LBs that I've got. I want to get down. And I can attest to it. I went and I sat down with Lalitha. It's actually how I met you. Then I tried to convince you to come on the show to talk about it, was going through the meal plan. And I didn't have a ton of weight to lose. I wanted to lose more inches around my waist. And I lost 4.5 inches so far and 13
awesome.
Pounds.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lose any more weight, I don't think, at this point, because I'm trying to bulk up now. But the inches factor, which is key, because I do want to talk about that for all of our guy audience and girls, of course.
Right.
But they say the number one cause for health concerns for everybody is having excess weight around our stomach.
Yeah, so that abdominal obesity, it's one thing that we do get concerned about because it can really be a risk factor when it comes to our cardiovascular health, because the fat that's essentially present there can mobilize. And so we don't want that around your mid circumference area. We want to get rid of that fat and minimize that fat as much as possible.
Letha, as always, we appreciate it. So we'll have that for anybody who wants to maybe eat a little bit better or find out how they can maximize their workout effort. Because a lot of people will train all summer for their big event.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not fueling your body properly, you're kind of wasting a lot of that training effort because you're not maximizing your effort.
Yeah. I mean, you could be negating your athletic performance, essentially. So even just some fine tuning and tweaking can make a world of difference.
Letha, always great to talk to you. We'll talk to you again in a month.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Letha Taylor from Taylor Nutrition. She is a registered dietitian.